Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Little Fish. This is the show where we put down our favorite facts from the last 7 days and we go through the podcast at QI.com inbox. We pick out the best facts that you have all found and we're going to read them out now. I'm sitting here with James Harkin, Andrew Hunter Murray. Guys, let's do it. Who's got a fact?
I've got one. This is a great one. It's from James Patterson and it's that.
The author?
No.
How do you know?
It's spelled slightly differently.
Oh.
I've got an answer for everything. James Patterson, or James Patterson using an incredibly unimaginative nom de plume. The fact is, it's that during the Cold War, a KGB agent had several meetings with Edinburgh Leith MP and communist sympathiser Ron Brown. However, they were unsure if he was spying for them or not because they couldn't understand his thick Scottish accent and had no idea what he was telling them.
That's incredible.
It's
Do some reading on that? Is that true?
A little bit. It's from this Ben McIntyre book about Oleg Gordievsky, who was, I think, a double agent on various sides. And the quote was, Brown may have been leaking top-grade secrets, but equally, he might have been talking about football. And they just couldn't tell. They just could
That's
not
amazing.
Tell.
That's amazing. Can I just say, my wife is Russian, as has been mentioned a few times on this show, and she actually finds the Scottish accent the easiest to understand.
That's so interesting.
I don't know why. When you learn another language, it's kind of, you can understand it usually, but when people talk over each other, that's when it's tricky. But she can do it with
Scottish. What is the cadence? I mean, there are Scottish accents and Scottish accents.
There are.
You can get some really, really hard to decide.
Because actually Edinburgh is a relatively soft accent.
Yeah, it is. It is, absolutely.
Glasgow's often said to be the harder of the two to get.
Yeah. I don't know where Ron Brown was from. I know he was the MP for there, but he was apparently a colourful character. He was a Labour MP who damaged the parliamentary mace in a row over the poll tax and ended up in court for stealing his mistress's underwear.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I have another political one. Should we jump to that very quickly? Yeah. So this is sent in to us by Brady Steeper, and it's to do with Canada's longest-serving prime minister, who's called William King. So he says it's important to know, before hearing this fact, that he guided the country through the Great Depression, the Second World War, established Canadian citizenship, and successfully challenged the power of the crown. And the guy who he was challenging it against was called Lord Byng, in a delightfully named constitutional crisis called the King Byng Affair, or the King Byng Wingding.
Yes.
Yeah.
I presume they were just waiting for... They had, at some point had to have a wingding.
Yeah.
They were called
honestly,
King Byng.
I've never heard the phrase wingding used outside of fonts.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know it was a thing. A wingding was a thing.
Lovely. No, I don't think I did either. No.
I think you say, we had a wingding. I've heard that.
No,
before.
I've heard we had a ding dong.
That was when it was the Prime Minister of China, Mr. Ding, and the Vietnamese currency, the dong.
Ding dong, ding dong.
Well, anyway, the fact that Brady wanted to send to us is that on his death, King donated his estate to the Canadian government, and that included all of his diaries, 172 volumes.
Wow.
And when they were read, they revealed that he made huge use of seances during his term as prime minister. So while he was prime minister, he was consulting with his dead mother. He was consulting with a former dead prime minister, Sir Wilfrid Laurier, and his dog, Pat. He would talk to his dog, Pat.
I think he stands up in Parliament. I think we need more biscuits.
And one other thing to say, woo!
Woof, woof.
Yeah, but I mean, apparently he spoke to Pat about the importance of the involvement that Canada had in the Second World War, conscription into the army.
Blimey.
I seem to remember reading about this, and I think that the story has been changed a bit over the years. I think he was using it as a way to air his own thoughts, and he would use either his dead mother or a former prime minister as a sort of soundboard.
Can you choose who you get through to in a seance? I don't really know much about them.
You can try and request. I think that's largely people go and they hope that someone that's on their mind will show up.
No, but if you've got a particular previous prime minister, can you say, I'd rather have someone from the other party, actually? Or can you say, like, is Genghis Khan available? We're in the middle of a total war.
I'm sure you could.
Yeah.
I'm sure
it depends
how
pliable your medium is, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you read that in the news about the Canadian prime minister? Was he in Davos?
Carney.
This week? Yeah, he stole some sandwiches. It was the Mark Carney Sarney Barney.
Oh, my God.
I was wondering why you hadn't said anything for the last minute. I can't believe you let me go through a whole seance chat without coming.
I wasn't listening to any of that.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to be shocked when you hear what happened while you were gone into your pun temple.
Okay, here is a fact from Sasha M. And Sasha says, Sasha sends us what they call an almost perfect sentence with no further context. This is from Harper's Magazine. And the sentence goes, South African taphonomists found that pigs decompose more slowly when they are wearing winter garments and more quickly when they are eaten by the Cape Grey mongoose.
Yes, I sort of would have expected that last bit, I guess.
It's a brilliant sentence. I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic.
Winter garments as well.
Yeah, well, what they do is they use pigs decomposing to analogize to humans.
Like, oh, yes.
If you want to do an experiment to see how humans are going to decompose, you can't get a human and do it. Right.
Right.
But you can get a pig. There might be one left over from an abattoir or something.
Yeah.
And so that's why they do it. So they put them in garments to see how the pig decomposes in case someone has been... Like, let's say you find a body in the top of a mountain and it's at a certain level of decomposition, you compare it with the pig.
No, but I'm just imagining the process of getting the winter garments, like having to drag a dead pig into a branch of North Face.
Yes, yeah.
We need something a little bit bigger in the waist, I'm afraid. Do you have any?
Wow.
That's a great sentence.
Yeah, lovely.
I also read a brilliant study. This was from quite a few years ago now, about 20 or 30 years ago, but they put 3 tons of dead pigs in the middle of a forest in America. And again, they wanted to see what would happen when it decomposed.
Mm.
And this one was slightly different. They wanted to see if there was a big die-off of any animal, how it would affect the ecosystem.
Interesting.
So they put these dead pigs in the middle of the forest. They looked at first the vultures came and then the maggots and then the flies and all that kind of stuff. And basically what they found is it gets really nasty quite quickly.
Right.
And not only did it get really nasty and there was dead pig everywhere and it was all rotten, actually the area never really recovered. And it still hasn't really recovered. And they're still studying it today because it's not back to how it was when they did the study.
Gosh.
So, yeah.
That's wild.
That is wild.
Again, it's just scientists, you know, you need to know this stuff.
Absolutely.
You don't know when it's going to be useful in the future.
Absolutely.
But,
yeah. Andy, you. Let's get a fact.
This is you. This is a fact from Nicholas Wilkinson, who begins, unpromising, it's maybe not exactly a fact, but you know the pangolin?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a strange, scaly creature, isn't it?
It's quite hard-shelled.
Hard-shelled, yeah. Much used in...
Looks a bit like an armadillo.
Yeah. It looks a bit like an armadillo. Lovely long claws. Traditional Chinese medicine gets through a fair few. I think they've just been removed from the official.
I think they're the most trafficked animal in the world.
Well, I'm glad you say that. Well, I'm not glad you say that. I'm incredibly sad you say that because they're lovely. Sorry. So, you know the thing of more sharks, many, many more sharks are killed by people than people are killed by sharks.
Yeah.
Nicholas writes, this is similar, because of the trade in pangolin products, about 1 million pangolins are very sadly killed by humans each year. Obviously horrendous. The total of humans killed by pangolins is 1.
Oh, wow.
Okay? So they have no teeth, they're slow moving, they have poor eyesight, and they're about the size of a cat. Okay? So it's an amazing story. It's from the book Mammals of Thailand, right? When threatened, the pangolin will wrap its tail completely around itself, turning itself into a ball, basically. So it's almost impossible to unfold.
Yeah.
Like an armadillo or a hedgehog, whatever. But this is related by a naturalist called W.W.A. Phillips. A villager clubbed a pangolin one day in the jungle and started back for his village. The pangolin slung over his neck, the tail hanging down on one side, the head on the other.
Uh-oh.
But the pangolin was merely stunned.
Mm.
When found later, the man was dead on the trail, strangled, because the pangolin had suddenly come to... And then thought, right, coil up, defensive.
Yep. Pangolin strangling.
Oh my God.
If only there was a head of state that rhymed with that.
If you can think of a head of state who rhymes with pangolin or strangling, podcast@qi.com. Yeah, and it was still curled around his neck when the guy was found, proving he'd been the victim of a scaly mugging. There you go.
Yeah, really good. Amazing.
Yeah.
What a story. Good.
What a story.
Well, while we're in the world of animals, Jelk Ludolfilge, apologies for the pronunciation there.
No notes.
Ludolf Fulch.
It's very rare to hear you nail it the first time, but Jelk.
J-E-L-K-E?
Jelka, probably. But that was exactly how you speak when you're doing an impression of the Nobel Committee.
Sorry, Jelka or Jelk. But it's a great fact you've sent in, which is when biologists catch lizards during field work, they use a loop of dental floss with which they lasso the lizard. This makes sure that the lizard remains unharmed and can be later released again without injury. The lasso is, of course, known as a lizu. So a little dental floss lasso for lizards.
That's really quite sweet.
It is quite sweet.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, here is a fact from Sam Walker, which Sam describes as a little fun fact. But let's see what you think. Sam says that the average ejaculate contains approximately 220,000 terabytes of data.
Terabytes?
Mm. Terabytes.
That's massive, isn't it? Like 1 terabyte is very big.
It's more than I've got on my computer. Dear. Oh, dear.
You can get get special cloths. Buy one of the lights and that'll show you where you need to devote most intensive attention to.
Oh, dear. You know when you walk straight into your own trap?
You could almost physically hear the funk as your head hit.
Oh. It was a proper sideshow, Bob and the Rakes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is because each sperm contains around 37.5 megabytes of DNA data, which is basically your genome is in every sperm.
Okay.
And there's a lot of sperms in an ejaculate.
Right.
But I think if you were to put it in a zip file, if you were to compress it, because actually all the data is kind of very similar.
If it's gone into your zip, something's gone wrong. sorry.
What I'm saying, like, there's a fact that says that the amount of data is the same as the entirety of English Wikipedia, approximately 40,000 times.
Wow.
That amount of data. But the truth is that all that data is almost the same. So if you were to put it into your computer, you can compress it. And actually, I think it would be much, much smaller than that.
Okay.
Because it's like, the thing is about data is you can have, like, Mary has a little lamb written down. But you could do the same thing 200 million times. But is there really any more data there? Or is it the same amount of data just replicated?
So it's a lot of...
Just see a receptionist at the sperm. Please go. Thank you, Mr. Harkin. But actually, we just need you to fill the sample. Thank you. But I will pass that on to...
I'm writing it down. Zip file. I got it. Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to need to give that a wipe.
This is a very brisk one from Kenneth Bauman, or Bauman. Hopefully this is suitable for little fish. I work for a competitor of Chevrolet, so this one stings a bit. The Chevrolet Suburban is the longest produced automobile model, or nameplate, still in production today. It was introduced in 1934.
Wow.
They've been making Chevrolet Suburbans since 1934.
Gosh.
Isn't that weird?
I can't picture anything, but I can't imagine what a Chevy
it's a really quite big American car,
is it?
Okay. And I'm sure they get much bigger, but it is on its 12th generation. Like, if you look at the first generation one, it does look different to the modern.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah,
like Doctor Who is just
exactly exactly.
Yeah,
also on roughly the 12th generation, right?
That's what when yeah, I can't remember actually. Yeah.
A rare chink in the armor for you, Dan. Are we counting the audiobooks? Because
that's amazing.
Yeah, well, I know. It's a good one, isn't it?
Is there any other ones that are kind of similar? I can't imagine. Like a Ford Fiesta.
I think Ford Fiesta. That's the one that was in my. That's interesting, isn't it? It's like when you say think of a car, people say Ace of Spades. If you ask a British person to name a car, they'll probably say Ford Fiesta.
I think so. Mm. But wasn't like some of the early Volkswagens? Didn't they date back to World War II? I don't know.
Yes, they probably they probably had a bit of a clear out of the Volkswagens, didn't they, after the mid-40s?
I think they...
Tended by association? I don't
maybe.
Know.
Oh, yeah. This is the problem of doing this show with no Google.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll do one more here, which was sent in by Chloe Martin. She says, a good Hong Kong fact for you. Redneck Cellar Terrace in the Hong Kong mid-levels is so named because the original sign writer wrote Alexander Terrace right to left, as in the Chinese way. Redneck Cellar.
Is Alexander backwards?
It's Alexander backwards.
Now, we've mentioned this on the show before.
We have, and we've mentioned it because my mum and dad lived on that road.
Yes.
Yeah.
friend of the podcast, Rednecks Heller.
Last one?
Yeah.
Okay, this is from Graham Wallace. And Graham says, you've covered animal regeneration previously, but this seems to be an extreme example. There are two sea slugs from the species Sacoglossan that can amputate their entire body and then come back to life.
Wait, what's what's left if you've amputated your entire body?
Your head.
Oh.
Head and body. Separate,
oh, I yes. Guess. Yes.
Separate
yes.
Your head from your body.
No more shoulders, knees and toes, though.
It's a quick game.
Head. You've got your eyes and your ears and your mouth and your nose.
So you actually, yeah. It's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the thing. How do you get the energy to regrow your body if you're only a head and you don't have a digestive system?
I guess you can't travel around to eat because you were using your body for that.
Even if you could eat, was the food yes, can't digest if yes, you don't yes, have a digestive yes. system.
So I would say small, like micro digestive system just in your mouth.
It's kind of, but there's something more.
Do you park the bottom of the hole in your neck on the anus of another slug and take in the nutrients of what's passed through their body?
Wow, Dan.
I mean, that I can imagine that working.
Nature is wild.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But sea slugs especially, they are wacky.
Yeah.
What seems to happen is that they eat some algae and the algae photosynthesizes, creates energy, and that gives them the energy to then create
wow.
Their
that's
body.
Insane.
I know. That's
that like, is that's, nature. That's that like, is yeah. That's as weird as you said, Dan.
Is it?
That's,
yeah, I was going to say, is it any weirder than attaching your head onto someone's anus to get the
it's
nutrient?
Like, it's weirdly like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein monster, where it's like electricity was turning, like it's creating this kind of zap sense of
question over here. Actually, I don't think she ever says the galvanizing force is electricity in the book.
No, but in the preface, she does talk about Galvani's experiments.
Yes, but that's just an example, and actually it's very unclear what chemical mechanism is used to bring the creature to life.
Yeah, but I would...
Sorry, I'm just forestalling emails.
I would have said Frankenstein in that case, but I said Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is the name of the Kenneth Branagh film. In
touché.
Which electricity is used.
I'm going to cut off my top knot right now. Very nice. Very nice.
Okay. Well, this is brilliant. We love these facts coming in. Thank you so much, everyone. And before we wrap up with this episode, we got one more important thing to do, which is hand out some past headline facts to members of the highest tier, friend of the podcast, of Clubfish. So who wants to go first?
I will. this one goes out to Radu Flueras. Fantastic name, Radu. This is the fact that in medical jargon, LOL used to mean little old lady. And that meant that other doctors' acronyms included LOLINAD, little old lady in no apparent distress, or LOLFUDGBE, little old lady fall down, go boom.
This is great. This is episode 27, and we had as guest on the show Helen Zaltzman.
It's such a weird one, this kind of medical jargon stuff, because the idea is that doctors write it on your notes. Mm. And then I saw a really, really believable debunk saying, you're allowed to get your notes now. There's absolutely no way that any doctor would do this. And a load of doctors saying, yeah, it was a thing that happened in the past, but we don't do it anymore. But then I've heard actual doctors saying, yeah, we do that.
We do this all the time.
So I don't know what to believe.
Yeah. In between carving our initials on your liver during sensitive operations. Yeah, I think probably, it definitely used to happen a fair bit before you could get your notes quite so easily. Yeah, and Helen is, of course, a complete podcasting don.
Yes.
She's of Answer Me This and The Illusionist and all sorts of other shows. And
I don't think it's too much to say that we were partly inspired to make this show from Helen.
Yeah. 100%.
They showed kind of the potential of what a podcast could be to everyone who was making it at the time. So that was very cool. We love Helen.
Okay, here is one for Alice Jackson. And Alice, your fact, I'm sorry, it's another Dan Schreiber one. Only joking. No, it's a great fact. It is that according to researchers at Glasgow Caledonian University, listening to Billy Connolly can substantially increase your tolerance to pain. This is the way that they do this is you put your hand in ice for as long as possible and you take it out when you can't manage it any longer. And they've done a few experiments like this. The famous one is the one about swearing, which is you could keep your hand in the ice for longer if you're just going rap, 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 rap,
effing and jeffing.
Yeah, effing and jeffing, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were just doing a thick Scottish accent. I can understand what you were saying. The old Ron Brown. Well, congrats to you, Alice. That's your fact. And now, Kate Hames, we have one for you. Is it not Hames?
No, I'm just laughing because do you remember you called me Hames for quite a long time?
Hames.
Hames.
But yes. I think one reason was, did I not get mentioned in someone's book?
Yeah, you received an acknowledgement in Steve Colgan's book, which was Hames Harkin, and you became Hames for a very long time. Yeah, so Kate Hames, this is your fact. The first woman to cycle the world learned to ride a bike the day before she set off. Is this friend of the podcast...
Annie Londonderry.
Yes. Yeah. Who was an amazing world-traveling cycling lady. And she was, I think she was about 23 when she did it. She was so young. I think she might even have had a husband and children who she might have written out of the story.
She did.
Which she was selling to the press because she wanted to be like young, single, cool lady.
Right.
Gets press attention.
You know what? That's a lot of the story, but there is so much more to it.
Yeah.
And you can read all about it in the excellent book, Everything to Play For, the QI Book of Sport by James Harkin and Anna Tyshinsky. She has a whole chapter about her.
Yeah.
In
oh,
that.
Wow.
Or you can just go on Wikipedia. I mean, it's all there.
Or you could listen back to episodes 27 as well. I think we found some stuff that isn't in Wikipedia for that.
We went
to the old newspaper archives because she was in the newspapers quite a lot, and they gave like lots of really amazing stories of when she fell off her bike and all this kind of stuff.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And do you think, did she cheat for any bits? Obviously, she went on boats over the ocean bits.
But, yeah, we think that a lot of her stories should be taken with a bit of a pinch of salt.
Yeah. But she was very cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah, super cool.
Very early friend of the podcast. Cool. One of the first ever friends of the podcast, actually.
Yeah, but she did make it to, we did recently, if you're part of the top tier of Club Fish, there is the friend of the podcast tier. If you remember that, after 3 months you get sent a t-shirt, and we have made a friends of the podcast t-shirt which lists all of the greatest friends of the podcast.
Yes.
And she makes it on there.
Cool.
Annie Londonderry appears. Andy, let's go to you.
This is a fact that goes to Mark Norman. Mark, your fact is that when Californian ground squirrels are attacked by snakes, they increase their blood pressure, so their tail gives off more infrared radiation, making them look bigger. You might be thinking, well, my blood pressure would increase if I was being threatened by a rattlesnake. But the really cool thing is they do this with rattlesnakes, which they know can see in infrared, even though the squirrel itself can't see in infrared, it knows that the snake can.
It's fascinating.
And it doesn't do it with other snakes. So we know it's a deliberate thing because it knows.
Yeah.
I guess it just knows it works. Maybe it doesn't know about the infrared spectrum.
Yeah.
It just does something.
Yeah.
And this works against that snake. And they're like, guys, we should do that again.
Exactly.
Here is a fact. This one goes to JDG. JDG, I don't know what they stand for. But I think the J might be Joshua looking at your email address. But anyway, JDG, this is your fact now. And that is that every day, over 100 people used to watch King Louis XIV get up and get dressed.
Magnificent fact.
Yeah, that was one of your facts, Andy. And it was a brilliant fact about how his life was just on display.
Yeah, it was called the Reveille, wasn't it? And people just woke up and... Well, they woke up early and then went to watch him wake up. And then they watched him have his first wee of the day. And then they watched him get dressed. And then they watched him have his breakfast.
Yes. We're actually thinking of launching a higher tier where you can get this kind of access too, if anyone registers their interest.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm going to read out the next one here. And by the way, that last fact was from episode 28. So here's the second one from that episode, which is now under the custodianship of Gemma Donnell. And it is that there is an original Picasso that we will never see because it was eaten by the dog.
Really nice.
I know he was very prolific, Picasso, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was the one who also supposedly did the drawing on a napkin to pay for his... croissants.
Yes, that's right.
And they said, Mr. Picasso, can you sign it, please? And he said, no, I want to pay for my coffee, not the entire cafe.
Yes.
Yeah. Always a way to endear yourself to the staff, isn't it? Do you guys ever do this in cafes or restaurants? I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I offer them a bit of tedious humour and, get 10% off.
Get 10% off?
5?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just take a service charge. Yeah. Thank you very much.
They've actually added 10% to the bill. Time wasting.
Here's another one.
Yep.
It goes out to JF. This is the fact. It's that during the Second World War, the US Navy diving manual contained detailed instructions over what to do if eaten by a giant clam.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, that was one of mine. I can't remember the details about it now, but it was just in this. I remember seeing the images,
yeah,
the little
I remember
illustrations.
And then we looked into it, and actually, a giant clam isn't strong enough to.
It takes an hour to close.
Yeah,
and all of this.
Yeah. And even if it did close, it has little gaps in it, and you'd be able to get your foot out anyway.
Yeah, yes. Just a clam. Grow up.
I don't want to be responsible as a podcast for anyone being eaten by a giant clam and them saying, oh, I'm just going to keep my foot in here for an hour because no such thing as a fish said that I'll be able to easily wiggle it out.
They're called no such thing as a fish. They know what they're talking about in the underwater realm. You're fine. I sort of think it would be cool if we were responsible for that.
Do you?
Well, we're trying to get publicity this year, aren't we? It's the year of, you know, putting ourselves out there.
You're right.
So I think getting listeners eaten by giant clams is one way of doing it.
Yeah.
Is that or the one show?
I think the problem with that is if we try and get our listenership up by doing away with our listeners,
yeah,
you know, we have to get two new listeners for the one that we've lost.
Do you know what? That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
Okay, well, there we go. Our latest custodians. Congratulations to JF, to Gemma, to JDG, to Mark, Kate, Alice, and Radu. You are now the custodians of all these facts. If you yourself would like to get ownership of one of our facts, all you need to do is join the top tier of Clubfish. Go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish. And not only will you be given a shout out on the show, but we will also send you a digital certificate. And do with that what you like. Anyway, we're going to be back again next week. Do keep sending us your facts. We absolutely love reading them out here on Little Fish. Otherwise, come join us again on Friday for another regular episode of No Such Thing as a Fish. We will see you then. Goodbye.